Thank you for standing by, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's webinar. We have with us Mr. Nicholas Bornozis, President of Capital Link, organizer of the event. I must advise you this is being recorded today, and we now pass the floor to Mr. Bornozis. Please go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and good morning to everyone. I am Nicholas Bornozis, President of Capital Link, and welcome to everyone to Capital Link's webinar series. Today's webcast will feature ETF securities on the topic, "What is the contribution of commodities in portfolios?" We're delighted to have with us our featured presenters, Matt Collins, CFA Director, Head of U.S. Product Operations, Capital Markets, and Maxwell Gold, Director, Investment Strategy. This event is accessible through a live audio webcast, and then it will also be available as an audio archive through www.capitallinkwebinars.com. Please note that the presentation slides are user-controlled. To access this presentation, please look to the top right-hand corner, and you will see two buttons titled Preview Slide and Next Slide. And by clicking on each button, you can go forward or backwards on the presentation. There will be a Q&A session after the presentation. Webinar participants can submit questions through the special button on the event page titled Submit a Question, or you can email them to us at questions@capitallinkwebinars.com. Please note you can submit a question anytime during the event, and our presenters will address your questions after their presentation. Please note that the opinions expressed by the presenters are not intended as legal or investment advice or advice of any kind as a matter of fact, and are provided for informational and educational purposes only, and Capital Link bears no responsibility for them. Furthermore, the presentation may contain forward-looking statements concerning future events. Before passing the floor over to our presenters, I would like to mention that Capital Link's fourth annual Dissect ETFs Forum will take place on Thursday, June 22nd, 2017 at the Metropolitan Club in New York City. There is no attendance fee for investors and advisors, and to register, please visit forums.capitallink.com or email us at forum@capitallink.com. The forum, as usual, will qualify for continuing education credits. And now I will turn the floor over to Maxwell Gold. Maxwell, please go ahead.
Great. Thanks, Nick. And thanks, everyone, for joining us today. I've got a very exciting topic, you know, certainly to discuss here. And what I want to do is just, you know, take a step back and just give you a little bit of information about us at ETF Securities. So we're a global exchange-traded fund provider with about $22 billion in AUM globally. You know, we're headquartered in London, and here in the U.S., headquartered in New York, you know, we have an exhaustive suite of commodity ETFs, both in the broad commodities, the energy space, as well as the precious metal space. What I want to do today is sort of, you know, take a look at how your commodities as an asset class can, you know, really provide some benefits and some unique exposures to advisors and to investors in terms of how they're incorporating their asset allocation mix. And certainly with the current, you know, macroeconomic environment, I think there's some unique opportunities that commodities can, you know, bring to the picture in terms of, you know, constructing portfolios as well as managing investment objectives for a lot of clients out there. So before we get into it, I just want to cover, you know, the first and foremost, the most exciting thing about any presentation is the disclosures. So if you look at, you know, going through the slides, slide number three through four, five, and six are just some key disclosures about information I'm going to present in the following slides. So, you know, just you know, taking a look at through three through six and seven, you know, just some key disclosure information in case you guys have any questions about definitions or any additional disclosure information. But, you know, jumping into the heart of the deck, you know, so hopefully you guys are following along either on your screens or on a downloaded version of the slide deck. But I'm looking at slide eight here. And what I want to do is pan out and just sort of take a perspective of where we see the current, you know, economic environment and why we think that may be beneficial, particularly for commodities, based on historical cycles and, you know, historical performance. But overall, if you take a look at the global growth picture, you know, this is the chart on the left is looking at a factor of GDP, and it's breaking down GDP by developed markets, including the U.S., Europe, and Japan, as well as emerging markets, and sort of the difference in the spread we've seen amongst the growth rates between emerging markets and developed markets over the past 15 years or so. And you can see that really following the crisis, you know, the key catalyst had been emerging markets. You know, they continued to outperform, you know, developed market growth rates, whereas developed markets have been very, you know, sideways, very, you know, very tepid growth, very, you know, steady as she goes. And what is, you know, important to highlight is even though we've seen emerging market growth come down in recent years, we're beginning to see a bit of a tick up again, increase of industrial activity, increase of industrial production, of manufacturing, of trade. And I think that's a good sign, you know, particularly on the both services and manufacturing side, that emerging market, which had been the key catalyst for growth over the past couple decades, is still, you know, resuming that role and is most likely going to continue that role for the, you know, for the foreseeable future. On the flip side, developed markets, you know, they are beginning to see a pickup of, in, you know, of economic activity, of growth, you know, not just on the manufacturing side or industrial side, but more importantly on the services side. And I think that's, you know, an important highlight, the distinction between, you know, especially for commodities, is that emerging market growth is certainly more intrinsically linked to the commodity cycle and the commodity sector than, say, developed market economies these days. If you look at the U.S. economy, about two-thirds of, its growth is dependent on the services industry and tech-related. It's less so tied to traditional sources of industry such as manufacturing or industrials. So certainly I think that where we're seeing a recovery, a beginning of a pickup, particularly on the emerging market side, is certainly an expectation for growth to continue to show signs of recovery. On the flip side, the next chart on the right actually is looking at a measure of inflation. This is different measures of U.S. inflation. And this is another key theme that we see, you know, evolving throughout 2017 and heading into next year, is that we do see the return of inflation. And that's sort of been a factor that investors have not had to deal with for several years, really since 2014, and when we saw, you know, commodity prices, particularly energy and oil prices, begin to collapse, you know, midway through 2014. But now that we have seen a sort of recovery in the energy space and in prices of input goods, primarily commodities, as well as on the services side, you know, that has helped to boost inflationary measures. And you can see that whether it be on a PPI basis, which is, you know, focused on producer inflation, on a CPI basis, which is consumer inflation, or different measures of those, which, for example, the PCE, which is a measure that the Fed actively tracks in terms of where they think inflation is. You know, overall, the Fed has stated they have a 2% inflation target. Our expectation that the Fed is actually more likely to, you know, be comfortable with an inflation overshoot, whereby they're willing to let inflation in the U.S. go above that 2% target. And on a PCE basis, which is their measure, we're not quite there yet. And so certainly some room to run. But on a CPI basis, on other measures of inflation, we have seen, you know, certainly an acceleration of inflationary measures. And that's, you know, based on also realized inflation as well as inflation surprises. So certainly the pickup of inflationary measures has, you know, been to the surprise of a lot of investors over the past 6 to 12 months. And that's another factor, which I'll get into deeper in a moment, of how it's tied to primarily commodities, and that we do see commodities tend to track, you know, inflation closely over time, and they do you tend to perform well when inflation is rising, such as the environment where we are now. So the key takeaway from this slide, slide 8, is that we are in an environment where global growth continues to recover and expand. We're seeing increased manufacturing, increased industrial production, which is good for commodities as they are key inputs for those industries. And then on the flip side, we're also seeing rising prices. We're seeing rising cost of inputs, rising demand from consumers, and we're also seeing tightening labor costs, so a tightening labor market globally. And that's another factor of inflation. If you actually turn to the next slide, slide 9, you know, there's a couple other factors I want to highlight. So additionally, beyond the fact that we are seeing improving growth and improving inflation, we are beginning to see a diverging monetary policy. And this sort of lends its way into what I think is another key factor of a role for commodities and asset allocation. You know, bottom line is, you know, we have seen at the chart to the left on slide 9, central banks continue to expand their balance sheets. You know, there's, you know, we've obviously seen the Fed, you know, limits its increase of its balance sheet, and there's news potentially of it looking to beginning to, you know, reduce its balance sheet. But, you know, the Fed has also looked to tighten and increase interest rates, whereas other, you know, major central banks in the developed economy, such as the ECB in Europe and the Bank of Japan in Japan, have actually continued to remain accommodative, where they are keeping rates lower. They're continuing to expand their asset purchase programs and their balance sheets. And you can see that to the chart to the left here, where we're at certainly record levels in terms of the amount of assets where central banks are holding. That, in conjunction with the chart on the right on slide 9, is obviously we're seeing a rise of economic policy uncertainty driven by this monetary policy actions of the past 10 years almost, as well as the uncertainty on the fiscal side with geopolitical volatility, with populism rising in the U.S., in Europe, as well as the uncertainty around the new administration here in the U.S. and their potential economic policies, particularly around tax reform, deregulation, and infrastructure. So when you put all these together, you know, this creates certainly diverging monetary policies, create volatility. We're seeing this uncertainty weigh on markets and the outlook for potential economic benefits that and how it weighs on growth globally. So these environments are certainly pushing, you know, more volatility, and, you know, certainly is creating a challenge for investors to look for, unique investment opportunities in this space. But now turning to turning to slide 12, I just want to skip to slide 12. Certainly, there's other slides in this deck that you can take a look at your own time. But sort of on that point of where we are seeing rising growth, rising inflation, and continued rising volatility and diverging policies both on the monetary and fiscal front globally, this creates sort of a challenging landscape for investors. And this, I think, is perfectly depicted on slide 12. The chart on the left is looking at equity valuations on a PE basis across different major economies, whether it be the U.S., Europe, Japan, or emerging markets. And this is looking at the current PE or the current valuations for their equity indices relative to their 10-year averages. And certainly, you know, with the exception of Japan, but again, Japan, I think, is a bit of a value trap for other reasons, you know, we are seeing stretched valuations compared to recent averages, you know, whether it be in the U.S., Europe, or even in emerging markets. Not to say that we're in bubble territory for equity markets, but we're certainly in an environment where stocks are expensive. And on the flip side, if you look at the chart to the right, we see, you know, a continued reduction of interest rates over the past 30 years. And this low yield environment, or lower for longer, is most likely going to persist and weigh on markets. And obviously, this is bid up fixed income or bond prices. And so in this environment, this creates essentially volatility whereby equities are expensive, fixed income is expensive, and investors are sort of sitting here, well, there's not a whole lot of unique opportunities or, you know, attractive opportunities in the investment landscape. And I think that's what's helped push interest more into alternative assets such as commodities, such as precious metals. So we are seeing an environment where it's challenging, you know, stocks and bonds are expensive, and we're beginning to see the return of inflation where in conjunction with growth. And what I want to touch upon right now is sort of, you know, how that ties into our outlook for commodities and some key sectors in commodities. Slide 13, I just give a quick highlight of, you know, where we see energy sector, and where we see, you know, the supply-demand dynamics coming into play. Overall, you know, we do see, you know, a continued tightening in the U.S. oil and the global oil market. You know, we have been seeing OPEC, which is, the major producer globally, cut their production from 34 million barrels per day down to just about 32 right now. But where we've also seen at the same time is we've seen an increase of production in the U.S. And so that has, you know, weighed on oil market prices, in recent months. But overall, we expect a continued tightening and, you know, a chip away of what has been an oversupply or a surplus or a glut of oil in recent years. And as we begin to see a continued tightening or rebalancing in the market, this should, you know, continue to be a benefit to the energy sector overall. On the, additionally, the chart on the left sees the rise of increase of oil production recently in the past year and a half or so, as you'll after following a large pullback in the oil rig count or how much active oil rigs there are in the U.S. But, you know, overall, we do expect continued production cuts from OPEC to be extended, you know, this year. So again, that will help rebalance what is currently an oversupplied global oil market. Additionally, the next slide, slide 14, just a quick overview of the precious metal sector and why, you know, where our outlook stands for precious metals. Two key factors that drive precious metals are real interest rates and the dollar. And the chart on the left on slide 14, you can see that the negative relationship between real interest rates and precious metals has been to their benefit over the past 10 years or so, really the 15 years. And we've seen a continued sort of stagnating real interest rate environment. Over the past 5 years, real interest rates, which is, again, the measure of market rates less inflation, hasn't gone anywhere. We've seen, you know, interest rates globally continue to decline and remain low ever since the financial crisis. On the flip side, we're also seeing rising inflation. And in this environment, we expect real interest rates to continue to remain low, even though we are seeing tightening in the U.S. by the Fed, and, you know, because we are beginning to see rising inflation. And so in that environment, historically, precious metals have performed when real interest rates are low or negative, and really they perform well up until about when real interest rates are 2%. Right now, real interest rates are about 50 basis points, so certainly more room to run. And with our expectation of rising inflation and, you know, a slow but steady tightening by the Fed should continue to keep rates lower for longer. On the flip side, we have seen the dollar run up recently, particularly following the U.S. presidential election in November. But that has actually come down year to date, and the dollar's down about 3% since that peak it hit. And it's been another story of it's been range bound really since a strong run up in mid-2014, following the appreciation and the fall of oil prices. But overall, we do expect the dollar to remain pretty much range-bound throughout this year. And in that environment where the dollar is still weakening from recent highs and we expect it to be pretty much flat this year, that is another boost for the precious metal story and for the broader commodity story, really, which traditionally have a negative relationship to the dollar. Where if the dollar continues to weaken, that should boost demand for precious metals as well as other commodities. And then finally, just touching upon one other key sector is the industrial metal space and how that ties into this global story of increased growth, increased inflation. We have seen the chart on slide 15 on the left. You know, we have seen a reduction of investment by miners in terms of capital expenditures, and that has obviously boosted the balance or the supply-demand balance for industrial metals. And as we're seeing an increase of industrial metal prices, that obviously has, you know, brought some of the investment back. But overall, we expect that, you know, continued reduction or continued tightening on the supply side by miners as they reduce their investment, they reduce their output, should bring a lot more industrial metals such as copper, aluminum, and nickel back into balance and equilibrium and potentially into deficit later this year and going into next year. And that obviously has boosted the outlook for industrial metals. Additionally, on slide 15, the chart to the right looks at sort of the global infrastructure story and how that ties into demand for industrial metals. And the expectation is that global infrastructure will increase significantly from about 34% last year to about 50% over the next 10 or 15 years. And we expect that growth to be spurred not, you know, also by the U.S. with, you know, a lot of focus on potential new infrastructure agenda by the administration here in the U.S., but more importantly by emerging markets, particularly India and China. And their, you know, continued increase of their infrastructure will increase demand for those key industrial metals such as copper, such as aluminum, nickel, zinc, steel. And we do expect that to persist as a key theme for demand of or increased constructive view for industrial metals over the medium term. And so I want to skip over a slide and actually go to slide 17 and sort of bring this, you know, into focus of, you know, we remain constructive for the commodities on a sector outlook basis. We do think that continued growth and continued manufacturing should boost the demand for commodities in conjunction with rising inflation. But more importantly, back to that sort of that challenging investment landscape where we are seeing stretched valuations in equities and low yields with bid-up bond and fixed income prices. You know, how does that come into play from an asset allocation standpoint or from a portfolio construction standpoint? You know, commodities, you know, are, in our view, are a key alternative investment. They have some unique factor exposures because unlike financial assets like equities and fixed income, you know, they are driven much more by their fundamentals, the supply and demand factors. And those can be, you know, sometimes distinct of what's happening in financial markets or what's happening with equities or earnings outlook. You know, we do see these unique exposures or factors being the key drivers, and, you know, they tend to have a low correlation to not just equity markets over time, but fixed income markets or rates as well. And you can see that to the chart on slide 17. Here what I'm looking at is the broad commodity index or the Bloomberg commodity index at the top. Its historical correlation or relationship to the S&P 500 for U.S. equities, the MSCI World for developed market equities, and the Barclays U.S. Aggregate, which is a broad U.S. fixed income index. And you can see that historically commodities have had, you know, a fairly low correlation at about 0.3 for U.S. equities and about 0.38 for global equities. And for fixed income, it's been pretty much 0.05 or close to zero. If you actually break it down by the different sectors, you know, these different sectors react differently to both equities and fixed income. But overall, when you put the pieces together, what these low correlations and what drives commodities being the key fundamentals of supply and demand, you know, they are tend to be much more cyclical, but it's sometimes counter-cyclical in the sense such as for precious metals, which are typically viewed as, you know, increasing demand in times of turmoil. This creates this low correlation picture, which can increase diversification when they're added into a portfolio. So this source of low correlation to equities and low correlation to fixed income has increased the interest amongst investors and increased the, you know, the demand for commodities as an asset class in conjunction with a stock bond portfolio. And you can actually see this a little bit in depth or further if you turn to slide 18, where you can see really the portfolio benefits from including just a modest allocation to commodities. And here what I've done is essentially I've taken a standard 60-40 stock bond portfolio, you know, something that's representative of a balanced risk profile, and I've compared that to a balanced, that same balanced portfolio, but, you know, added 10% to commodities from an equity allocation. And you can see that the line chart to the left is essentially looking at, here's the reduced overall volatility, whereas if one is your standard 60-40 portfolio volatility, you can see persistent reduced volatility from the portfolio level by including a 10% allocation to commodities. And that comes from those diversification benefits, the low correlation to equities and fixed income that you, you know, that can be garnered from including commodities into a diversified allocation. But it's not just reduced volatility. You can actually see reduced, you know, reduced drawdowns, you know, increased Sharpe ratios, which is a measure of risk-adjusted return or efficiency in a portfolio. And you can see that that's the case pretty much for not just balanced portfolios, but more conservative portfolios for or even aggressive portfolios. So, you know, the key takeaway is that, you know, adding commodities to your asset class mix or to your diversified portfolios can bring some unique alternative exposures in terms of they're driven primarily by their unique markets, by their unique factor exposures that are distinct of financial assets, and that creates that unique diversification benefit and low correlation, which can, you know, help boost your return, reduce volatility, and reduce drawdowns, overall adding to your investment efficiency. So I think that's really why we view commodities as a key alternative asset. Now, what I also want to do is turn to you know, some of those key factors at the start of the presentation. So we're turning to slide 19. You know, another key factor beyond, you know, commodities as broad commodities is, you know, they have diversification benefits that can help improve your risk return your profile and the amount of risk you're taking in your portfolio. But I think what's also unique, particularly towards our outlook for commodities in the individual sectors, is that they tend to perform well when we're seeing rising inflation. And this is, you know, makes a lot of sense that, you know, a key input for most goods and services have, you know, closely linked ties to using commodities, whether it be energy or gas or oil to produce something. The key inputs for any, you know, product from a manufacturing side obviously is key to have those, you know, metals or those, you know, commodities that are utilized in production. Additionally, you know, we do see these tend to move in line with rising inflation. And the chart on slide 19 actually sees, you know, the performance historically whenever we see a rise of 50 basis points in U.S. CPI or U.S. inflation and how commodities have fared. And you can see that on average, you know, the average monthly return or the average return over these periods of rising inflation of 50 basis points tends to perform, you know, very strongly, particularly for energy and agriculture, which makes a lot of sense since the key measure for inflation is, you know, is energy and food prices. But beyond that, if you look at the all commodities, the second bar, it's actually, you know, that could be a great way to gain exposure towards the inflationary cycle or rising inflationary pressures, which again, we are beginning to see, whether it be on a producer basis or a consumer basis. Additionally, we see a tightening labor market that's increasing labor costs, which is another form of inflation, along with that weaker dollar, which is inherently inflationary. So in this environment, we do see commodities to continue to persist historically on a positive basis performance. But overall, we expect, you know, not just the individual sectors, but the broad-based commodity exposure continue to keep up with rising inflation. Historically, commodities have performed up about 15% whenever we do see a strong run-up in U.S. inflation. And that's, you know, similar to what our expectation is. We see that U.S. inflation on a CPI basis could get up to about 3% by the end of this year. And certainly, you know, the Fed is keeping a close eye on inflation, but most likely willing to see inflation run above their targets. And then sort of dovetailing into the growth and inflation story, if you turn to slide 20, this is a great sort of a scenario of how we see commodities continue to perform positively in extreme periods. So what I've done here is I've broken down the relative performance of commodities to other asset classes, whether it be real estate or REITs, global equities, bonds, and cash. And you can see that the periods when commodities perform the best is typically when we see, you know, rising growth with, you know, essentially rising growth, but even more so, rising growth with low or high inflation. And you can see that this is compared to when we see slowing growth or extremely high or extremely low inflation. So the quadrants here are evaluating the extreme periods of inflation, so whether it be extreme high or extreme low, or overall rising growth and rising or falling growth. And you can see that really commodities do perform best when we do see rising growth. And so where we expect, you know, moderate inflation, you know, continuing to increase, you know, getting to historically higher levels of inflation, that's really the quadrant, the first quadrant on the left, you know, essentially the rising growth, the high inflation. And you can see that historically, the average return for commodities has been about 1.5%, or about 1.25%. And that's obviously outpaced equities, cash, and bonds, only second to REITs. And overall, commodities have performed, you know, positively in these extreme periods. But you're really where our expectation is, we're seeing continued expansion globally, continued growth led by emerging markets, continued rising inflation, and increased industrial production, which is increasing demand for commodities. This should be, you know, what we expect is a continued attractive climate or attractive backdrop for commodities to continue to perform strongly over this year and certainly into next year. So this is part of the reason why, you know, tactically we do see your commodities to continue to add benefits from that inflation hedging perspective beyond the strategic case for diversification and reduction of volatility and risk-taking. So that's really where we see commodities fitting into the portfolio context. And what I want to do now is hand it off towards my colleague Matt Collins, who's going to go a little bit deeper about, you know, given our view of where we see commodities fitting into the role of a key diversifier, key alternative investment, as well as its role of hedging inflation, and how you could potentially, you know, think about that in terms of how to get exposure to commodities. So with that, I'm going to turn it over to Matt.
Okay, thank you, Max. I think there's a lot of great information in the deck. What we want to do before we wrap up and move to questions is really give everyone on the line an opportunity to understand how to implement some of the items that Max discussed. First and foremost, I want to mention three products that recently hit the market from ETF Securities. And again, just to reiterate what Max said, we are ETF Securities is the third largest commodity provider globally. But we're also the largest provider of Bloomberg commodity products globally with about $4.5 billion just in BCOM assets. For those of you that aren't familiar with the BCOM index, the Bloomberg commodity index is the most tracked commodity benchmark in the world with about $64 billion in assets tied to it. It's essentially the S&P 500 for commodity investing. But there actually wasn't an ETF in the U.S. tracking the BCOM index. And most importantly, you know, a lot of the investors that we surveyed before coming to market here in the U.S. with the commodity products, they just weren't happy with the offerings that were out there, primarily because they were so expensive. The average expense ratio in the U.S. for commodity ETFs was 76 basis points. That is very much on par with active funds or even active mutual funds. So we launched this product at the lowest cost commodity offering in the U.S. At only 29 basis points. So it's 60% cheaper than the average commodity ETF that's out there. But most importantly, it's tracking a very transparent, easy to understand index that gives people access to commodities. And that ticker is BCI. So for those of you placing more of a macro view or finding a way to place commodities in your portfolio, particularly as Max mentioned, as us sort of maintaining a very constructive view on commodities, BCI is a really simple, low-cost way of implementing some of that. On page 21, this will give you a sense of why BCOM is so popular for investors. If you look at the assets that are in commodity products now, most of the products, the strong majority of the products and indexes out there are about 50 to 60% energy. If you think about buying a broad commodity offering and 60% of it is energy, you're really just buying something that's going to be driven by the energy market. The Bloomberg Commodity Index is really the only leading index and now the only ETF and with BCI that maxes out energy exposure at 33%. So you're getting a much more diversified, well-rounded investment experience by capping some of the sectors and gaining exposure to something like gold and silver and agriculture, something that one can be defensive, could be progressive, but more importantly, it's also very well tied into inflation, as you increase the agriculture exposure as well with rising prices. So from a construction standpoint, we really do like the BCOM index. For those placing, I would say, looking to build a long-term portfolio, the second thing that we've heard from investors is they've had trouble investing in commodities because what's known as contango. That tends to be most exaggerated in the oil market, where essentially you're losing money even if the market is up, because you're buying at a premium, but because you can't accept delivery of the underlying commodity, there's hedge funds out there that are essentially arbitraging the front month in the commodity market. And all of this activity between passive investors and hedge funds and arbitrage investors tends to ruin a client's experience in commodities, in particular energy. So for those of you that have a longer-term outlook, want to place commodities in the portfolio, but want to mitigate some of the issues like roll costs and contango, we launched an ETF, the Bloomberg Commodity Longer Dated ETF, ticker BCD, on page 22. That particular product moves away from that heavily congested window where front month, you know, oil contracts are coming, and it buys contracts in more distant parts of the futures curve and gets away from all that arbitrage activity. And you can see on slide 22, from a performance perspective, historically, it's done much, much better because, again, it's moving out of that congested window, investing in further dated future contracts. So BCD, again, priced at 29 basis points as well, tends to be a nice product for investors taking a more long-term approach to commodity investing. So with that, I want to hit one question for Max that came through. I think a lot of investors, you know, that we've talked to have also raised this question, but how should they think about investing in individual commodities like gold, oil, maybe at a sector level like precious metals and energy, versus just investing in broad commodities?
Yeah, happy to jump on in that. That's certainly a question that we get a lot is, and the way I like to think about it is really from more of a, you know, longer-term strategic perspective and a more shorter-term tactical perspective. You know, longer-term, you know, I think there are inherently unique benefits of commodities as an asset class that, you know, can serve a role for all investors in, you know, over time and add unique benefits, you know, as that key alternative investment, providing diversification, you know, increased portfolio efficiency, reduced drawdowns, reduced volatility, and unique exposures, you know, particularly in environments where we see, you know, an increase of the economic or business cycle. And, you know, I think that, you know, that unique perspective is, you know, what warrants a role in a strategic allocation for investors. Typically, I recommend, you know, maxing out a commodity allocation to 10%. I tend to like to split that 10% between 5% precious metals, diversified precious metals, and a broader commodity exposure. Certainly because, you know, precious metals have a little bit more downside protection. We do see increased demand, and they tend to outperform when we do see a lot of market volatility or financial turmoil or systemic risk, such as when we saw back in 2008. And overall, that split of about 5% diversified precious metals, 5% diversified commodities creates a nice mix, you know, in a diversified portfolio to capture those strategic allocation benefits. On the tactical side, I think certainly over the shorter term, you know, really over a 1 to 3 year cycle, I think there's unique opportunities where more individual sectors or individual line item commodities can certainly play a role for potential outperformance. And I think that's where, you know, exposure to the energy sector through oil, natural gas, and gasoline, or into some more cyclically sensitive precious metals like silver, platinum, and palladium can play a little bit more of a tactical or opportunistic role in a portfolio. And so I think that that's really where, you know, over a shorter time horizon, those types of individual commodities or individual sectors can, you know, lend a role for investors. But overall, I think that shouldn't, you know, take away from the key strategic benefits that commodities and, you know, precious metals can play in a diversified portfolio, from increasing that portfolio efficiency, reducing risk, reducing drawdown, and creating diversification benefits from having that unique exposure to a market that is distinct from equities and fixed income, particularly in an environment when both of those are at, you know, stretch valuations.
Okay, great. So just on page 26, before we wrap up, you'll see each of our products listed there. Most importantly, we don't have any ETFs that have a K-1 associated with them. So each of the commodity products that we launched not only are low cost, but they're also K-1 free, and that's always been a huge burden on advisors. So that space is relatively new in the U.S. to have K-1 free ETFs. So we're certainly happy to sort of solve that part of the equation for investors. But again, Max and myself, you know, we spend a lot of our day talking to investors about the commodity market, how to invest in these products, our outlook. So please contact us at etfsecurities.com/US, and you can also follow us on at etfsecuritiesus as well. And then we have our phone number there on page 26 as well.
Yeah, great. Thanks a lot, Matt. And actually, there's another question that just came in through here. Talking about more of the tax implications of investing in commodities, whether it be futures versus the physical metals. Maybe, Matt, could you touch upon that about, you know, something that investors should consider, you know, particularly if they're interested in investing in commodities through ETFs, what the tax implications might be? You mentioned K-1s, but, you know, maybe you dive a little bit deeper into that topic.
Yeah, so I think, you know, as investors look across the landscape, there's a few options, but the 95% of the assets in the industry are tied to products that distribute a K-1. So big ETFs like DBC or USO, which is sort of the famous oil ETF, all have a K-1 out there. But for gold ETFs, they are, as long as they're physically backed and they're not using futures, there's also not a K-1 associated with any of our gold or silver or platinum palladium ETFs. So it's a fairly simple investment or year-end tax process for investors. No capital gains or anything like that coming from the physically backed products. So that's really what you want to look at when you look at these products, is take a look at the underlying exposure that these ETFs are offering. You know, anytime there's sort of a synthetic nature to the metal products that you're looking at, or even the commodity products, tends to be a more complicated tax situation. So that's why we've structured all of these to be K-1 free, so investors don't really have to worry about it.
Yeah, it sounds like it's a great way to get, you know, just transparent, direct exposure, low complications on the tax front, and certainly at a very cost-effective approach.
And then finally, the next Capital Inc. Annual Dissect ETFs Forum on June 22nd. We will be there along with a lot of other leading ETF providers, so we're happy to engage there. But with that, I think we'll wrap it up. I know the webinar is recorded, so there for replay as well.
Thank you, everyone, for joining today.
And with many thanks to our speakers today, that does conclude today's webinar. Thank you all for participating. You may now disconnect.